You know, to me, it's so important to look through the financial balance sheets and into the real assets. It's, you know, what I say is all wealth comes from life. You know, this week we publish our interview with Jacob, and I read his book on the Rockefellers, which, of course, drew extensively on your work. And it was remarkable. I was up in Sweden, and I have a very dear, brilliant friend there who just said, you got to meet this guy. So he took me out to dinner with Jacob and his wife. It was a lovely dinner.
Yes. I'm jealous.
Have you met him in person?
I haven't. I'd love to.
You're in for a treat. You're in for a treat. They are lovely people. Anyway, but I got the Rockefeller book, and then he gave me an advanced copy of the translation for Global Coup. And his research blew me away. And you realized, you know, one thing I'll say about the Rockefellers, because, you know, my family came out of that syndicate at a low level, I should say. But they were hard workers. They were willing to work. And if you look at how much work they've done to build the climate change op and to build the technocracy, you know, because he really documents out the detail, Patrick. And it's just, he draws on your work, he draws on Sutton, and you're like, oh my God. You know, so when you say they knew that the currency couldn't last and they needed a replacement, you know, the total control of real assets, you're right. They saw it and they've been working like, you know, like an invading army ever since.
Yes, they have. I know they have.
Yeah.
Another a really important part of this, I know somebody's going to say, well, you can't buy up the whole world.
Yes, you can.
You know, it's because.
Yes, you can.
Oh, yeah. but listen, you don't have to buy up the whole world. If you can control the assets, it doesn't matter if you really own them or not. If you have control, you can do what you want. But you remember the old Goldfinger movie that was one of the original James Bond movies?
Yeah.
He didn't know initially what he was trying to do. He's trying to corner the gold market. He thought he was going to take over all the gold. And everybody thought he was going to rob the Fort Knox. And then the plot thickens, and you realize he's got an atomic weapon. He's going to blow that up inside of Fort Knox to irradiate all the gold in Fort Knox so that nobody would touch it for 500 years. And he would, and he had already bought up all the other free gold in the world. And he figured, when I get rid of that gold and just, you know, it's no longer available, my gold is going to be worth everything in the world. And it was a brilliant plot. But you see, we see this kind of mentality where large swaths of rich, mineral-rich land are being completely put off limits. They put gates up at the roads and armed guards, whatever, so you can't go in and use it.
Right.
It's taking it out of the pool of where resources are, making all of the remaining resources worth all the more.
You know, I hate to tell you this. When I think it was sixth or seventh grade, somewhere around there. You know, so as I said, my family came out of the Rockefeller Syndicate. And in seventh, we had this game. It was a world game. Every kid was a country. So they're like, you know, we didn't have 190 countries, but we had a lot because there were a lot of kids. And I was given the poorest country in the world. It was a Caribbean island, and we grew tobacco. So I spent the whole 25% of the game going around and making deals to buy up all the tobacco until I had a complete tobacco monopoly. And only then did I really go out and start to trade. I built my monopoly. And even then in seventh grade, I knew how to do it. And are you ready for this? I turned out to be the richest country in the world when it was over.
Good and job.
It was all from using addictive material to create a monopoly.
Yes, indeed.
So it's an intergenerational, you know, it's an intergenerational inheritance. Yes, so like, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Well, I think I'm going to point a lot of people to your article about the BIS and encourage them to start thinking about, okay, where is this sovereign immunity touching you in your life?
Right.
Who do you know who's hiding behind this shield? You know, and how to, you know, for God's sakes, if you're banking in any of the systemically important banks, get the hell out.
Yeah.
Because they don't have to obey the national laws. You're not safe.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. Yeah, you're not safe.
you're not safe. I don't know if you know the Madoff story at J.P. Morgan Chase. I was interviewing Helen Chapman, who was one of the attorneys who really dug in and went after sort of trying to get people's money back. And I said to her when I was interviewing, I said, Helen, she wrote a book called J.P. Madoff. And apparently in the investment operation, Madoff had only one bank account from, you know, I don't know, I think 94 on, and it was all at J.P. Morgan Chase. And I said, well, if J.P. Morgan Chase was the only bank account, who was the custodian for the securities? Mm. And she said there was none because there were never any securities, which means under the Know Your Customer law, the money all went into J.P. Morgan Chase and it never went to buy securities, and they knew.
Yeah.
And I said to her, Helen, don't you understand J.P. Morgan Chase was the senior partner in this relationship? They controlled. Right. He would leave balances of like $9 billion just sitting there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
wow. Right?
So, but, you know, maybe it was a BIS account. Maybe.
Yeah, I know. You know, I had the thought one time when I originally wrote this. And by the way, I would encourage people to get this book if you can't find it online.
Yeah.
The article is online, but if you want to get the whole all three of them together, you can get this book at any online place. It's just look for Globalization, my name, or Globalization.
But you can get it on your way. You can get it at Technocracy News, can't you?
Yeah, it's on technocracy.news as well. You can find it there. The article's there. But if you want the hard copy, you know, we may not have the internet forever, that you can get the hard copy that way.
Right.
Now I lost my train of thought. What did you just say?
I was talking about, I don't know, I was thinking about how wonderful your books were when you held up the book. Oh, well.
I forget now. It'll come back. But this whole thing, I know what it was. I was talking about transparency.
Right.
We've talked a lot about transparency. You and I have, I know. And I know you talk about it a lot. Transparency is the answer in all cases.
Yes.
This is what election integrity is all about in our country right now.
We
must have transparency. This is what the financial audit is. This is the reason that like the SEC originally was created was for transparency. It doesn't do that anymore. But, you know, everybody down in society, the little people like me anyway, we want to be able to see that the people up there higher than us are not abusing their privileges. They're not sucking off money. They're not stealing from us. They're not doing criminal activity. And what's wrong with that? There's just nothing wrong with it, but it depends on transparency.
Right.
No transparency equals criminal activity every single time.
Right.
And so even by having this interview, we're raising the bar of transparency.
Right.
And this is not just you and I spinning conspiracy yarns here. This is from their own documents that we're talking.
Right.
This needs to be exposed so people can see what a criminal organization is going on up there, pulling the strings on this whole thing. And when you realize what people like Klaus Schwab are saying, that you'll own nothing by 2020 or 2030 and be happy with it. These people that are associated with the World Economic Forum are all of these giant banking firms and all of these central banks that are servicing them. This is the whole crowd. They're all in it together. And when you see what the BIS can and is doing and what other, you know, the IMF and the World Bank and what they've been doing over the years, and then you see the propaganda and the rhetoric coming out of the global elite like a Klaus Schwab, and people remember that World Economic Forum was started at the instance of Henry Kissinger mentoring Klaus Schwab way back in the 70s. Hey, Klaus, why did the organization have a discussion club? And here we are. But, you know, when you realize how the whole picture kind of fits together, your view of everything changes.
Yeah, it does.
It really changes. You begin to behave and think in different ways you never thought were possible, but it's based on fact. It's not based on fantasy. It's not based on propaganda. And
so
this is what you need.
You go. So I want to bring up something, but I have to go to a dark place. Is it okay? If it's too dark, tell me to back off. So I wrote a book called Dylan Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits, which is up online. It's available in French, German, Spanish. And it tells about the process by which I got booted out of the establishment in the 90s. And the thing that really offended me was they were building slave labor camps. They were dropping SWAT teams. You know, the American government passed in 1994. So the same year that Greenspan goes on the BIS board, they pass the big crime bill in 94, and they start dropping SWAT teams into poor neighborhoods, rounding up kids who, you know, some of just walking down the street, but some of them have been entrapped by the drugs they're bringing in. Yep. And they fill up these private prisons. And if you look at them, the private prisons, the Department of Justice has a private business that markets this labor to corporations for pennies on the dollar. So you're building slave labor camps. And it starts exactly when they go into the BIS. And I bring this up for two reasons. One is we know the history of the BIS is very deeply involved with the slave labor camps in Europe during World War II.
Yes.
You know, and you have a series of the corporations who were deeply involved. And so you have this history of slave labor. But we're also now with the chipping talking about a system where everybody becomes literally a slave. Yeah. Because the reason they stopped the overt slave trade, in my opinion, one of the reasons was they couldn't perfect collateral. Now, if they chip everybody with a global ID system, and there's some people who say all the numbers are at the BIS, and one of the reasons that building was built with all this data, you know, capacity was just this reason. But whether it's true or not, you know, I hate to say this, we're talking about people and institutions in my personal experience, but in the documented record have a history of slavery.
Yes.
Slavery is a very profitable business. They believe in it. It works for them.
And, yes. And better to be a willing slave than one that has to be forced, coerced, and fed for life. Right. If you're going to slave somebody piece by piece and molecule by molecule, shot by shot, hey, it works. You know, you get the same results and same benefits. I would recommend anybody that has a mind to read really kind of, you know, deep intellectual books to get a hold of Shoshana Zuboff's book,
The Age
of Surveillance Capitalism.
Yeah.
It's a shocking book, but it basically describes digital slavery. It's like, oh my gosh. I mean, it is an incredible book, and it's something that people have missed entirely. She uncovered it for a number of reasons. But
I used to post many of her interviews, and I wanted to get her on the Slavery Report. The problem is the book starts off slow.
Yes.
And it's kind of very abstract for the first 50 to 100 pages.
Yes.
It's hard to get in, but her work and her research and analysis is first rate.
Yes, at least go to the summary. Yeah. I went straight to the summary, and I read that first. Then I went back to the first of the book. I always do that, though, with a book. I always go read the index before I look at anything else in the book. But her work is just is really insightful as to what's going on. And surveillance capitalism is not that's kind of a misnomer in a way. It's not capitalism at all. It's slavery. And she says that.
Yes.
But this kind of thing has been going on. And it's a dark area where there's no accountability, there's no visibility of what they're doing. They just did it, and it resulted in digital slavery. The same kind of darkness with no accountability, no transparency, whatever, is what we're talking about with the BIS. This is a top to bottom type of a thing. And all you can say is, at least from 2020, if we don't even go back to the 70s, just from 2020, we could say this, folks, you don't realize it, but while your life has been going along the way you thought it used to go along beforehand, the rest of the world has completely changed, and you haven't seen that change. You haven't seen it. You're not up on it.
Well, that's why I tell people, you know, you may be thinking it's no problem that they take your assets. It's a problem if they take your kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Well, you know something, Patrick? You've worked very hard for decades, and all that you've accomplished and all that you've written, all that you've published is now here to help us. And I'm just personally very grateful. I was driving along on a speaking tour with somebody not that long ago, and they said, oh, I feel so terrible about all the trouble you've had to go through. I said, don't feel a bit sorry for me. I have the greatest job on the planet. I just run around the planet hanging out with the best people in the world. It's fabulous. And these are people, if I was still back on Wall Street, you know, they wouldn't speak to me. So, you know, I would say the changeover was a little difficult, but the reward is tremendous.
Yes, I agree. It is.
Yeah. Yep. And you have just, I don't know, what you have accomplished is very inspiring, and I'm deeply grateful for your friendship. So
I speak in the spirit of Anthony Sutton for sure. I'm not getting mystical here. I'm just saying, okay, he was my mentor, if you will, back in those days. And if Tony were alive today, he passed in 2002, if he were alive today, if somebody asked him to give a speech, which I'm sure they would, could you come speak at our group? You know, he would get up and give a speech, the shortest speech probably in the world, four words. He would get up and he would say, "I told you so." And then he would sit down. That would be his speech.
I know, but it's not too late. It's never too late. It's not too late.
It isn't. Yeah. But people are listening more today than ever before. And I tell you, we've been through some dark spots where nobody was listening. It felt like Noah building the ark out in the, you know, for 120 years out in the wilderness. People were not listening for decades and decades. But now, because it's gotten in their pocket because of COVID, and mostly really because of COVID primarily, but the financial industry falling apart, the food issues now, the energy issues and the price of gas is through the roof. People are getting the feeling something is desperately wrong in River City.
Well, and what I'm trying to do with this interview, among other things, is tell them you have nothing to lose by acting, because if you look at what the alternative is, it's worse. So whatever. So let's, before we close, just let's walk again. People can come to Technocracy News. You've got a subscription service, because I get these articles you write that are subscriber only, aren't they?
Well, I do have, I'll explain it to you. But there is a newsletter that people can sign up for on my website for the daily digest of what goes out from Technocracy News. But when I started writing my new book, which is called, the working title still is The Evil Twins of Technocracy and Transhumanism.
Oh, fabulous.
That book I put up on Substack, and it's not a full book. I mean, I'm doing a serialized, you know, every time I get a chapter done, I drop it, and then another chapter, and I'm going to probably get through 13 or 14 chapters. Ultimately, right now, I'm up to chapter 2, and the preface and the foreword are there, too. So people can subscribe to that for $7.50 a month or $60 a year. I don't think it's going to take a year, but that's what Substack does. You know, they process the fees, and I get help, and it helps me write the book. It keeps me alive. And, you know, at the end of it, it will all be turned into a book, and people can have a hard copy for posterity.
And then of course that we can access your books at the website. Can we donate?
Yeah, absolutely. You can donate, buy books, anything you want. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And I do, oddly enough, I do have several people that do just donate, say, you know, here's $50, $100, $500, whatever. And I'm always surprised by it. I always appreciate it, no doubt.
Right.
But, you know, if there were 50 of me out there in the world that were cranking out stuff and that kind of had the background that I have to understand this stuff, maybe it wouldn't be as valuable as it is. I don't want to self-aggrandize, but...
No, I will self-aggrandize for you, or I will aggrandize you for us. I think putting money in your pocket is one of the best things you can do for freedom in the world.
Yeah. Thank you.
Roger Penske used to say, speed costs money, how fast you want to go.
Yeah. I know, so, I know. Yeah. It's like, this is our world and it's our future.
Yeah.
And Klaus Schwab has said he's going to, he said the future is his.
So there's this wonderful meme. I don't know if you've seen it. I'll end with this, of a little girl. It's like a Banksy graffiti thing. And there's a thing, it says the Great Reset up on the wall in graffiti. And she's crossed out reset, and it says, and written resist. So it says the Great Resist. And then she's got a caricature of what one of my subscribers calls the Schwabies. And sometimes the Schwab babies. And she's got a picture of Schwab, and it says, it's 2030, you own nobody, and you're unhappy.
I love it. That's brilliant. That's absolutely the Schwabies. I love it.
The Schwabies. And before we go, anything else you want to mention, Patrick?
You know, the only thing we haven't specifically talked about is the importance of free speech. And, you know, I started Citizens for Free Speech in 2018 to try and, you know, keep it alive here. I was really moved by by Matthias Desmet's take on what he calls mass formation. Not there's a lot of things he says I don't necessarily agree with, but the way he expresses the problem with mass formation makes a lot of sense to me. It clicks with
so
me.
I have to tell you, you hit a sore spot here.
Yep.
So I just did a series of interviews about why I think his theory is a bunch of bunk.
Yeah.
Total bunk.
Yeah.
And
I wouldn't argue that. That's why I gave a
Have you read his book?
I have. I should not all of it. I've been through about half of it.
Okay, so the second part is the part I would focus on. Because if you look at what he's saying, I mean, first of all, I'm a person who studied the control system.
Yep.
And he doesn't know anything or understand anything that I can tell from the book about the control system.
You're right.
But the other thing is he's teeing up the basis upon which other people will say, oh, well, they disagree with the official narrative. Let's put him in prison.
Yes, yes. His conclusions are wrong in that regard. I think they're absolutely wrong. And I would disagree with them. But the explanation that half the world is insane, I hear this all the time. Why is the world crazy? Why are people driving down the street with the window rolled up and they're wearing a mask? Something's wrong with people's brains. One of the things you brought up that struck with me, I did my own experience to it, is that free speech is the only way to fight back against this. If free speech is done, if they are able to silence it, we're done. The whole world is done. See, that's the problem. That's the problem with the BIS. There's no free speech. There's nobody can learn anything about it. So in the context of Europe, of the Bolshevik Revolution, with the German Revolution, Nazi Socialism, National Socialism, Cambodia with Pol Pot and all the countries in Africa that got took over. The first thing they did is they took out the media, they took out the radio stations, the newspapers, sometimes drug them out, shot them in the street and put their own people in there. When this so-called group of people that he points to as the mass formation people, this group of people gets together in their circular reasoning, they always create a scapegoat. Always.
Okay,
we have the pandemic, the plague of the unvaccinated in America.
Right. If you go to Solarian, you put in mind control, you will get a series of the best links on mind control. My Solari report on entrainment and subliminal programming.
Yep.
And at the very bottom are two links from two gentlemen on military grade neurological weapons. Mm-hmm. So I was on Wall Street when I heard two billionaire types talking in a conversation I wasn't supposed to overhear about entrainment technology and subliminal programming. So I don't think there's any kind of mass hypnosis formation. I think we have military grade neurological weaponry on the smartphones, on the digital mechanisms, you know, probably on Zoom when we're teaching. No, but we're talking about serious high technology, invisible weaponry that's being used on the population. This is not some kind of psychological phenomena. We're talking about serious brainwashing.
There has been, and there's been a lot of it. And the propaganda plays, the technology plays a huge role in this.
Right.
But historically, when free speech was killed in those societies where revolution was taking place, we're in the middle of a revolution right now.
Right.
When free speech is killed for that scapegoat group.
Right.
That is a singular point, the particular point where the killing begins.
Yes.
This what happened in Cambodia, Russia, Germany, Rhodesia, what used to be Rhodesia, Zimbabwe, all throughout the world, revolution is preceded by claiming some group is the enemy. Doesn't matter who it is, but they're the ones that get killed when they no longer can cry out and say, over here, I'm under great duress. People are after me. They're doing things to me. When they lose that ability to speak out, that's when the killing begins. This is what really concerns me.
So there is a great scene in The Gladiator with Russell Crowe. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie.
They're
in the slave quarters, and one slave turns to the Russell Crowe gladiator, and he says, they're worried that they're going to poison him. And so they have another gladiator test his lunch to make sure he hasn't been poisoned. And he hasn't, you know, the food's fine. And the other gladiator turns to him. He says, before the emperor can kill you, he has to kill your name. And that's exactly what you're saying. Before you can kill somebody, you have to kill your name. And the reason I so object to what Desmet is doing and from the book is he's trying to kill the name of the people who are pushing back against the official narrative. And he's trying to kill the name of the victims. So anybody who's been victimized by mind control technology is somebody who I feel empathy for. And if you make them out to be, you know, have a psychological problem of their own making.
Right.
Or you make the official narrative believer out to have a, you know, a psychological problem.
Yes.
Then you're killing their name so they can be killed.
Yes.
Right.
I fully agree with you on that. It's just the point. The only point I wanted to make was about free speech and the scapegoat.
Right.
And we see this happening today in Nazi Germany. It wasn't just Jews that were the scapegoat. Right. They got gypsies. Yeah. They got all the blacks. You know, the blacks. Everybody didn't like basically in that
invalids.
Group. They kill them all.
Yeah, invalids.
But oddly enough, back in the Bolshevik Revolution, it was the rich and the educated. You know, it's like, well, okay, so it doesn't seem to be rhyme or reason. It's just, hey, pick a group you don't like and let's make them the enemy and we're going to have a perpetual war with them.
Right.
So we're screaming out to maintain free speech. We have to keep talking. Even if we miss the mark, we need to keep the discussion going.
So I would recommend Peter Bregan did a fabulous 3-part book review of The Psychology of Totalitarianism.
Yeah.
And I would really recommend it to you because he gets into many of these issues. And I couldn't agree more. And because, you know, when these things start, you've got to stand up and you've got to say no. You got to. And what's interesting to me, Patrick, and I've seen this all throughout COVID, is when things look very dark, some guy just starts. Have you ever seen that video of the dancing guy? Some guy just starts saying, no, I'm not going along. And, you know, and he's out there by himself. And then another comes and then, you know, and then it falls. The narrative falls apart.
Yeah. All of a sudden, the whole square is dancing.
Well, you know, it's funny. I sent a video like that some to another group, and I said, you know, cash every day, because we've changed it from Cash Friday to Cash Every Day. I said, cash every day needs a dance.
Yeah.
Franklin Sanders used to have something called the bacon dance, and his grandkids would do the bacon dance when they wanted him to cook them bacon.
I love it.
Anyway, okay, well, how do we find the free speech website? Because there's another site.
It's citizensforfreespeech.org. Just like it sounds, no hyphens, just the whole word, citizensforfreespeech.org. And we're helping people learn how to become local activists, how to speak out, how to become statesmen where they are in their own local community, to get dialogue going, to be able to interact with their city council people and their, you know, their county commissioners, stuff like that, and the various boards and so on. We're not teaching anybody about issues per se, but if people have issues, I don't like what's going on in my community, come to us. We'll help you get traction on that.
You know, we, with our COVID-19 forums, we published something that Corey Lynn wrote on how to talk to your school board. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but
I haven't. So, that's great. That's great.
Can I tell you one more story that I've always wanted to tell you? And I keep saying I'm going to close and then I keep you on.
That's okay.
A woman called me from Phoenix. So Arizona, your territory. Mm-hmm. And first she emailed, and this is about 2 years ago. And she said, you know, I've been very active trying to stop this thing that's happening locally that is very wrong. I won't say what it is. I want to protect her anonymity. And she said, I've reached the limit of what I can do quietly. If I continue, I have to go public. But I'm a very shy and private person, and I just would find that unbearable. And I don't want to do it. And she said, you know, but I feel it would be immoral not to. What should I do? So I wrote her back and I said, look, everybody has to do this in their own way, in a way that's energizing. So she was a Christian. So I suggest you go watch a movie called War Room. Mm. And then if you're led, you start a prayer closet, a war room. And you continue to battle this thing spiritually, which you can do in private and you can do it quietly, but you battle them through prayer. So she said, okay, I'm going to try that. So she got the movie. She sent me an email. I'm thinking about this. I'm going to try it. And then I didn't hear for a long time, like a year. And I got an email from her and she said, holy cow, this stuff works. So I just want to close by saying, you know, you don't have to do what Patrick and I do to fight. There are thousands of ways. And I think prayer is one of the most amazing ways to do it. And I think prayer can make a huge difference in this situation, including praying for all those people at the BIS. You know, I used to do that during the litigation. I used to pray for all of them, and it helps so much. It helps so much.
I agree. That's a good answer. And ultimately, no doubt, the spiritual battle will resolve one day. It's still in play right now. And it is it's very much a spiritual battle. I think a lot of people, especially Christians, really recognize this. But even those who are not, who really have no knowledge of the Bible per se, even they are waking up to the fact, there is good and there is evil in the world, and there's a great conflict going on right now. And, you know, it's a shame in a way that the evangelical church in America has been greatly compromised through this COVID thing. And it's to be expected. We're in a war. Of course, they're going to go after the people who want to speak out. So a lot of churches no longer exist as a result of it. And a lot of churches that still exist are have fallen over into the vaccine camp and the, you know, the whole government narrative, CDC narrative camp. And they're kind of leading their people down a primrose path, probably into the, you know, wrong conclusions and stuff. But we need to have a group of people in the world, a group of Christians in the world. This can be anybody. It doesn't matter about station, who resemble what the Old Testament pointed to, called the sons of Issachar. That was one of the tribes of Israel, one of the minor tribes. And the sons of Issachar, it says about them that they understood the times and they knew what is to tell Israel what Israel should do. They understood the times. Obviously, everybody else didn't, but they did. And it was something that God gave to them, you know, that they understood what was going on. And they were able to instruct the rest of the nation of Israel on what the other tribes and what they should do. And if anybody should be like the sons of Issachar today, it should be the Christian community. It should be. That's not really the case right now, but I challenge people like that. If they are Christians, whatever, I don't care how high or low or whatever they are, if they just have that relationship with God in the first place, they could become a sons of Issachar where they are, understand the times, the signs of the times, and help other people get through it. What a novel concept. You know, how about helping your neighbor? How about helping your, you know, your family and your friends down the street and people that have been vaccine injured now and are dreadfully sorry they ever took the shot. Help these people, you know, be a blessing to them. Don't just, you know, stay and be a curse and say, I don't want to talk to anybody. Don't be that grumpy old man or old grumpy old woman. And you're only 40 years old.
Well, it's funny. I just have to show, cause every year we have a hero of the year. And Wim Hof, are you familiar with Wim Hof?
I have not until you told me.
Okay. I'm going to have to send you a copy of the Wim Hof method. Wim Hof has something called the Wim Hof method. He's an extreme athlete, and he really healed his physical self and life developing his method, which is a combination of breathing, cold therapy, and meditation. You know, these are all things that are free. You can do them anywhere you are, and it's remarkable. I mean, it's just absolutely remarkable what it does. Anyway, so we said at the beginning of the year, we did a Christmas message, and we said the first thing we have to do is we have to help anybody who's harmed by COVID. And one of the things we offered was, if you've been harmed by COVID, we will send you a free copy of the Wim Hof method to see if that can help. And we've now, I said I'd send out 50. We've sent out about 200 copies, but I'm going to send you one. Because that's what people need. They need help, but they need help that's practical and economic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. And there are some protocols now that the doctors are putting in. Yeah, there was the, right. what, the Zelensky protocol
right.
that for COVID. And now really high, you know, scientists, whatever, doctors are creating protocols for those who have been injured in one right. form or another. You can print that out, fold it up in your pocket, carry one with you everywhere you go, and you meet somebody, right. just whip it out, give it to them. So you right. know, just say if
it, it's. I watched an interview with Dr. Pierre Corey, who went through all, you know, what they found. They think that can work, and yeah. it was quite good. Anyway,
yeah.
Okay. So. Well, Patrick Wood, I've kept you way over. I can't thank you enough.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Let us know what we can do to help. Okay.
I will. I really appreciate your time today. Keep speaking out. I know you're a great champion of free speech. I just so appreciate that. And I know until your last breath, your mouth will be open. I know that. And I really appreciate that. So just don't ever give right. up, and don't let any disciples ever give up either.
Well, here's the thing. I can't imagine, you know, if you give up, what's the point of staying here?
That's right. That's exactly right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's what is it? I used to have one of my favorite sermons, said God wove freedom into the fabric of the universe. Freedom and wisdom and freedom in the fabric. And that's one of the reasons I love the founding documents in the United States, because our freedom comes to us by divine authority.
That's
right. You can't lose that connection no matter what happens.
That's right. Well, we will connect again, I'm sure. And okay. I hope that your time in Europe is profitable and fruitful.
Yeah. So I'm going to be back in the United States in October.
That's great. So, yeah. That's great. Maybe we'll have opportunity somehow. I don't know how, but maybe.
I don't know. I'm not making it all the way to Arizona.
Yeah.
You know, I used to always make it to Arizona because I'd go to California, but 2014, that was it for me in California.
Right. Understood. Yeah.
Okay, Patrick, have a great day. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on the Solaria Report. You have a wonderful evening.